This is a subject sermon on the subject of gambling. And I guess the question that comes to mind whenever we think about gambling, is gambling wrong? And I think there's probably some level of gambling that we all acknowledge is wrong. But the question is, you know, where does that level begin? And what is acceptable and what is not? Everything in life is not, we would say, black or white. And I use that, as I use that phrase, I think about, think back to one of our earliest years in the church. A young visiting ministerial assistant visited the church which we had just begun to attend in Atlanta, and he was, this is relevant because of what he had to say, he was a black ministerial assistant. And he gave a sermonette about how we use certain phrases or certain things which use color as illustrative of right and wrong, black and white. You know, black was, everything black was bad, everything white was good. That was kind of the message that he was sending, and it was from his perspective as a black person and what he had experienced throughout the years. And then white was somehow always good. Black and white. Everything is black and white. He said, except for one case, and that's in the case of financial statements. Then black is in the black. You're in the black. That means you made money. But he says, even then, it's compared to red. If you're in the red, you lost money. You know, so black and red, well, maybe black's okay in that case. But those were kind of his observations. And he was smiling about it and so on. But he was trying to enhance our sensitivity in regard to that. Well, I use that phraseology here. Everything is not black or white. Maybe I should have thought of a different way to express it. But there are certain things that are always bad, right? It's always, according to the law of God, when is it ever acceptable for us to commit murder? You shall not commit murder. Doesn't equivocate at all in that regard, does it? There are certain things that are always good, I would say. Paul says in 1 Corinthians, I think it's chapter 11, charity is always good, by which the root word is agape, or the love of God. The giving attitude, love of God, is without equivocation always a good thing. But there's middle ground, isn't there? There's middle ground. Sometimes there are those things which sometimes might be good and or acceptable at least, and even good. And yet, if we overdo those things, they might be bad. Might be even very bad. An example of that, when you go to the Feast of Tabernacles, whatever you earnestly desire to have, you may have, including, it says, strong drink. Now, we've understood strong drink to mean even stronger than wine or beer, that is distilled spirits. You may have it. Now, it is never, and especially not at the Feast of Tabernacles, appropriate to have so much strong drink that you become intoxicated so that you're not in control of yourself. So there's, but yet, if you use it in moderation, that's an acceptable thing. Eating is something that is absolutely necessary, isn't it? Every day, most of us eat. I mean, we may have a day when we fast, or some people even fasted. I've never done it, but some people have fasted for 3 days. There was a time in the Bible when it says Christ fasted for 40 days. But yet, still, when all of that was over, food was a very good thing. I remember Brian took us on a hike. He was trying. He saw me getting old, and so he didn't like me losing my physical capabilities. He thought he would enhance my strength by taking me on this one summer hikes, these long hikes. And so I went with him. I struggled, I tell you, some of the times along the way up these mountainsides in Pennsylvania and down the other side. And so after we got through, then we'd go and get something to eat. And I remember after one of these that was especially difficult, that we went to this place where they had steaks there in Pennsylvania somewhere, and they had really good steaks, and that was some of the best food that I ever remember having eaten because of the condition that I was in. We had a summer when we put a new roof in South Georgia on the house that Hazel grew up in and owned at the time, and we worked like 12, 14, 15 hours a day, and we didn't feel like eating. At the end of the day, you didn't dare eat during the middle of the day because you wouldn't go back out there, and we only had a certain amount of time to complete the project. And then, like on Thursday of that week, we could see the end of the tunnel, and we went to this place in Benton Lee's in South Georgia, and they brought out the biggest steaks I have ever seen anywhere. I didn't order the biggest one. Bryant did. And that was some really good eating. So eating is good, but eating is not always good, is it? Unlimited eating is not always good. There are things that, yes, we can say are always good, things that we can say are always bad. There are things which are sometimes good and sometimes not to be used too much. Judgment. Judgment in regard to these things, and I'm saying here gambling, is something that is one of those things that maybe, I mean, depending on how you define gambling now, we're going to have to talk about what we mean by gambling. But gambling may be a matter of judgment. Matter of judgment. And sometimes the judgment may relate to who we are, how we think, and how we respond to things. Here's what Christ had to say to the Pharisees about judgment. And it was about their hypocrisy. But yet, he said that their hypocrisy had to do in substantial part with the fact that they did not have or exercise proper judgment. Matthew 23:23, a pair of 23s here. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. You pay tithe of mint, anise, and cumin. You take care of the smallest things, but in the meantime, you're neglecting the more important things. They wanted a set of rules which told them everything. And I guess we can take that attitude about what we may consider gambling. And I don't know that we all have the same concept about what gambling is, because gambling involves taking a risk. But yet we can't escape from life without taking a risk, can we? There are risks associated with everything we do. You pay tithe of mint, anise, and cumin and omit the big things. You take care of the little things and ignore the big things. That's what he says. And he says these are the big things. Number one is judgment. Number two is mercy. Number three is faith. Judgment, mercy, and faith. He calls the weightier matters of the law. There are three of them that he lists there. Judgment, I would say, is involved here because it falls, it's not always good or always bad. Judgment is something that needs to be exercised, need to be understood by us in regard to the subject, which is gambling. He says, you should have taken care of these. In other words, he's saying here, your first priority should have been these. Not that you should neglect the others, but take care of the weightier, the high priority items, and then you can worry a little bit about the little things which are not such a high priority. So what we want to do here in this sermon is to consider if, when, and what. Three questions, I guess. If, when, and what is wrong with gambling? And I already mentioned we think of our life is a gamble. Everything we go through every day is a gamble. Somehow, games and gambling, the words games and a game and a gamble, they're somewhat related, aren't they? And we ultimately get back to when we express ourselves by using the word gambling, we are thinking about a game of chance. We're thinking about a game of chance. We talk about to take a chance, taking a chance. Those are just parts of our vocabulary. They're idiomatic expressions. We all are taking chances about everything every day. And yet, that sort of sits in opposition to this admonition by Solomon in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 10. Because you see, taking a chance and getting lucky, that's kind of an approach in gambling too, isn't it? We get lucky and we'll win the lottery. We get lucky and we'll win big bucks in the casino somewhere. Getting lucky. Taking a chance. We think of life, though, as a game of chance. This sort of stands in opposition to that concept. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10. Whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. There is no work, no device, no knowledge, no wisdom in the grave, and that's where you're headed. All of us. I'm a lot closer than most of you, probably, but not that I'm pleased about that, but that's just the situation. That's just the situation. And so that's kind of sitting in opposition, isn't it, to getting lucky or taking a chance. This is what God has for us. Whatsoever we find to do, and whatever we've been called to do, whatever our life is, he is admonishing us here. Solomon in Ecclesiastes is admonishing us to put our maximum effort into doing that thing. And don't just depend on getting lucky or taking a chance. Here's something else that Solomon says in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And again, I think this sort of sits in opposition to the randomness of getting lucky. Getting lucky means it was just a random occurrence. That's what we're making a statement about, isn't it? It's a random occurrence that just happened to us. Here, this is kind of the cycle of life. I think about this. I'm not sure how relevant it is in this particular sermon, but to me, for some reason, it sort of scratch my interest about life in general. To everything, there is a season. To every time, and a time to every purpose under heaven. You know, time to be born. And we remember when Bryant, Lisa, and Glory were born. I remember when Annie was born. When she came up and she would let me hold her. She didn't necessarily particularly seem to be appreciative of that occasion, but she was too young to understand what was going on. But time to be born. And there's a time to die. You know, I think about that, and I've used that particular verse of Scripture at times. Whenever I conduct funerals, there is a time to die. And God has given us a certain lifespan, and it's a good thing for us if we die at the time to die. And sometimes we may linger on, and it may be a difficulty for us. It's a good thing. There is a time to die. There's a time to plant. We've been planting our garden, and that's in the spring of the year. And everything has gone very well this year, mostly because, to a large extent, because when I went away to Estonia, I gave Bryant the plants, and I came home, they were all planted. So this is one of the easiest plantings I have ever had. But there's a time to plant. It had to be planted in that time, and if we hadn't gotten those things planted at the right time, we wouldn't have those particular crops. Now the peas, they're up about this high. See, but they had to be planted back in April. They had to be planted back in April to get that high, because peas only grow well in cool weather. If you plant them now, they'll get this high, they'll have blossoms on them, and not very many peas, because the plant didn't grow large enough, because the plant can't take the heat. When it gets that heat, it's going to stop growing and start blooming. Time to plant. A time to pluck up that which is planted. We generally do that in the fall of the year. There's a time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. Time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together. Time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get, a time to lose, a time to keep, a time to cast away, a time to rend, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, a time to speak. There's a time to love. There's a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. Now, what does all of this have, and what profit, he says in verse 9, has he that works in that whereas he labors? What does all of this have to do with gambling? Well, I guess it's, again, back to the same concept. Whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might. And don't depend, to the extent that we do these things in the season that they are intended to be done, in the way that they are intended to be done, we take a lot of random occurrence out of the equation. But life still consists of random chances. No matter how hard we may work and labor at it and do all that we can with all of our might. I'll give you an example of what happened in our life. We had a business that was, it was a very risky business we were in, building construction. And people who we worked with in the business that were actually service companies that worked with us, banking, bonding, insurance, those kind of people who helped facilitate everything we did. You couldn't be in this kind of business if you didn't have strong banking connections. You couldn't be in this kind of business if you didn't have insurance connections. In particular, our insurance agent, and of course his business was managing risk, or he would say to me, I don't know, people talk about gambling, but he says, I don't know anybody that gambles like you do with your business. And I wasn't really intending to gamble in the way that I thought of as gambling. I was actually trying to build something for somebody that would be providing them value, and I was then estimating, that's the gambling part, isn't it? Estimating and bidding. Can I do the, how much is it going to cost me to do this? That's a gamble, isn't it? I think that I had educated myself well enough that it wasn't such a gamble as he thought it was. But as far as he was concerned, and he was providing the risk management for us. You provide insurance for somebody, you're saying that if you do something wrong, I'm gonna pay for it. That was his business, to pay for whatever we did wrong if we did it wrong. And we had a few of those occurrences. We started a fire in Ithaca. At the Ithaca County or Tompkins County Library in Ithaca, and we burned up the inside of the place. And so he was the insurance agent that had provided the fire insurance. There's risk, you know. We're involved in risk, and in business, every business pretty much is a matter of taking certain risk on yourself. And life in general is. We think about life insurance. That's a risk, isn't it? It's a gamble. Is that a gamble? What about gambling? Is buying life insurance is... You're making a bet, aren't you? You're betting that you're going to die. And if you die, you win. And if you win, I mean, if you lose, you know, it's a paradox. If you live, you lose. You lose. When are you losing and when are you winning? Life insurance. That's also a kind of gambling, isn't it? I'll give you a personal experience that we went through. I think I probably mentioned it to you somewhere in years gone by. That is, whenever we had the opportunity to begin doing asbestos removal. Now, that was really considered a high-risk business. Really high-risk business. And there was a job that came out in Milton, Pennsylvania, south of Williamsport. That job was huge job for it compared to anything that we had ever done. It was to tear down the entire inside of two schools and completely replace the interior of those two schools. And so we had never, this was something like something we had never touched before. So Hazel was the owner of the company. I wasn't. She had the final say. So I mentioned to her that I'd kind of like to bid this job. She didn't like the idea at all. Taking a big chance there on doing that. And but she subdued her initial reaction, and so it was not at all certain that we'd be able to arrange the things we needed to do it. Could we get the insurance? Could we get the bonding? Could we get the financial backing that we needed to be able to do this? And so I just felt like, okay, let's proceed and see if we're approved to be able to bid it at all. And maybe if we are, then we'll decide if we're going to bid it. So she went along with that. And one thing after another started to fall in place. And as this began to happen, Hazel's going praying diligently about it behind the scenes. And she's praying that we will not get this job right up until bid day. And so the bids were opened, and we didn't go to the bid opening, but we got the information back that we were low bidder on the job. And so that's an example. We were taking a big risk. Yet, seemingly, this is what makes it interesting to me. It was a gamble. It was kind of a gamble. Seemingly, God could have intervened anywhere along the way and said, "No financing. You're not going to have the financing to do this job." That would have answered the question. You can't get bonding, and bonding became impossible to get. You're not going to get the bonding to do this job. Insurance. You had to have insurance. The insurance market closed down right after we got this job, and there was not insurance to be had for anybody anywhere doing asbestos removal. All of those things came to us. And so then bid the job and see. God has another chance to shut us down if he's listening to Hazel. Well, he was listening to Hazel. But it didn't work out that way because God blessed it. And so it goes back to, I think about that in regard to what I said in the sermonette. David, he looked at a lot of odds, and God nevertheless intervened for him, and I thought he did for us. But that's gambling. That's the pervasive nature of gambling and in life in general. We don't think about that maybe as gambling. It is, life is involved in gambling. It is a situation of taking risk one time after the other. It is not gaming. And we think of games and certain types of gaming as maybe gambling, and we may have different concepts about what we mean by gambling. But I'm addressing it from a broader perspective here, in that risk taking of everything we do is gambling. I think it's important to address it from that perspective because, well, if somehow risk-taking is always wrong, then this would be wrong too. And this kind of risk-taking obviously is something that affects all of us. Therefore, we cannot conclude that risk-taking in general is wrong. We can't live without it. Now, a question about these kinds of risky things that occur in life. Is God always involved in that kind of thing? Is there, do all things bad result as a punishment from God or somehow an intervention from Satan? I don't think we can say that. In fact, Christ said no. Luke chapter 13 and verse 1. Read the first five verses here. There were present at that season some that told him of the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices. Apparently they were going to sacrifice, and Pilate, the Roman curator, had fallen upon them with his soldiers and killed them, mingled their blood with their sacrifices, kill them. And so some of the disciples came and told Christ about this occasion. Jesus answered and said unto them, "Do you suppose?" And that's a kind of a rhetorical question which answers itself. That these Galileans were sinners? Is this why it happened to them? That they were evil people? Because they suffered such things? I tell you, no. They were not, I guess probably we would conclude, they were neither better nor worse than everybody else alive. They weren't particularly sinners, nor were they particularly righteous people. They were just a man, as it says in Les Mis, a man like every other man. Neither better nor worse. Are they worse because they suffered such things? I tell you, no. But, he says, except you repent, you will likewise perish. Or those 18 upon whom the tower of Siloam fell and slew them. Do you think they were sinners? Do you think this came upon them for a punishment? He said, no. These kinds of things randomly occur, and we're all subject to them. But he says, our extrication from this kind of random thing is to repent. We have to repent and be prepared for our own death, because we are going to experience it at some point in our life. There is a time to die. Yeah. Point is, time and chance go on around us all the time. I'd like to point this out about time and chance. God can be involved, has been involved, has used chance. What might seem to us to be random chance is not random chance. But he uses it to communicate to us what he wants. Leviticus chapter 16. Let's read verses 8 through 10. It's about atonement. What happens on atonement and how a selection is made on atonement. It was made by casting lots, something akin to rolling the dice. We talk about roll the dice and see what the outcome is going to be. It's an idiomatic expression, isn't it? We're talking about, well, we did this, we bought this, it was just a roll of the dice. On atonement, there was a roll of the dice. It didn't involve anything happening to human beings, but it was a selection process. Because on the Day of Atonement, two goats were to be brought. One goat was to represent Satan, and the other goat was to represent Christ. So they roll the dice for God to determine which one of the goats represented Satan and which one of the goats represented Christ. Verse 8, Aaron cast lots upon the two goats, one lot for the Lord the other lot for the scapegoat. And Aaron shall bring the goats upon which the Lord's lot fell and offer him for a sin offering. It was picturing Christ's atonement for us, a sin offering here on the Day of Atonement. Important to God to select between the two goats, which one was more appropriate for that sin offering and which one represented evil. The goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make an atonement with him and to let him go for a scapegoat into the wilderness. So God was using here random probability to communicate a message to us or to them at that time. Joshua 14 and verse 1, another occasion where this kind of casting of lots was carried out. After they had crossed the Jordan River, gone into the promised land, subdued the land in part, and now they were moving into and dividing the land up between the tribes, and inside that tribe, each family, what their future holdings as a family would be, was being communicated to them by God. These are the counties which the children of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel, distributed for inheritance to them by lot. Verse 2, that's how it was distributed to them. By lot was their inheritance. As the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses for the nine tribes and for the half tribe. In the New Testament, we also see this is used, particularly the particular example I'm thinking about is in Acts chapter 1. What happened to one of the 12 apostles? Well, one of the 12 original apostles died in that he hanged himself following the death of Christ. And so there was a replacement necessary. How was that replacement selected? It was selected by lot. And there were two people that were under consideration. They gave forth their lots. And the lot fell upon Matthias, and he was numbered with the 11. Now here's what some people think. And I don't think this is not my opinion, but it is something I give some serious consideration to, and I can't say that my opinion is more than my opinion, but I don't think, because I can't show you a scripture in this regard, but this is my opinion. First of all, what is the thought? Lots, or the use of dice, are somehow sacred, and God has reserved them only to use himself. Now, I don't buy that, but there are people who really feel that that is the case. And there's a school of thought, I don't know that it's in the United Church of God, but in the churches of God, there is a school of thought that people who are in leadership positions ought to be selected by lot as they were, as the example is set here. Consequently, they feel, those people who espouse this position feel that use of lots at all for any purpose is blasphemous because it is something that God has reserved to himself. I don't see that being the case. but that is a considered opinion that I give you just for your consideration. Again, I say judgment is a weightier matter of the law. You know, judgment, mercy, and faith, those are the three weightier matters of the law. And here we have something that is, because of all of the evidence to the contrary and the necessity for us to live under and conduct our lives under some form of risk management, I can't say that all risk-taking is wrong. Chances everywhere around us. By the way, I thought of this. In regard to this, there's a theory of math and physics which is called chaos theory, and that is somehow that the entire universe runs on a probability theory. Everything in the whole universe runs on that, and there's a lot of supporting evidence to that effect. Einstein, however, rejected that, and that he said, God does not play dice with the universe. That was his statement about that. And so it was more of he didn't have a good physical, mathematical argument against the theory that was being espoused. He had a theological argument against it. And surprisingly enough, Einstein, who often was considered by many people to be an atheist or somebody who didn't really give that much, of an approach to God, somehow felt that at certain times that he would bring out the fact that he really did believe in God. So that was interesting, I thought. Games of chance. Now, we talk about in our lives, life is pretty much a matter of properly managing the risk that we're all under all the time. But then, what about games of chance? We move from, okay, that which is necessary, which we all do, and it is risk-taking, and if we consider that to be gambling, well, and we can, and it can enter into the realm of gambling for sure. We enjoy games of chance. Jackson and Mason enjoyed playing Monopoly. I don't know. We had an old Monopoly game at the house somehow, and they got started on that. It ended up at their house, you know. And they were playing Monopoly to all kinds of, they were learning all kinds of things by playing Monopoly. They were learning about real estate and purchasing property. They were learning, and both of them liked to be the banker so they could be in control of the money and make change as they go around the board, you know, and buy this property or buy that property, buy and sell things. All of these kind of concepts were there involved in playing this game. It was an enjoyable recreational experience for them. Bad went to worse. Somebody came out with a new form of Monopoly. It's baseball Monopoly. So instead of getting being twice as bad because it's baseball Monopoly, it was four times as bad because it was baseball and Monopoly, both of which were so prominent in their lives. And so I don't know what the cost of a baseball Monopoly game was. It was outrageous, though. But they liked it so much that their uncle laid out an exorbitant amount of money, I thought anyway, for them to have a game of baseball Monopoly. And they really enjoyed that. And there was a lot of learning involved in that. Rolling the dice. They were rolling the dice. That's something we might think of in gambling, collecting the money, being the banker, learning to make change, building real estate, going through bankruptcy. Now, you see that if you don't manage your risk correctly, you will end up in bankruptcy. I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with playing that kind of a game. We might think it's a kind of beginning. It's an entryway, a pathway into gambling, we might say. We all probably say nothing wrong with this because we're only using play money and we're recreationally enjoying it. And God does not really restrict us from enjoyable recreational experiences if they don't somehow violate his laws. We can get a little bit deeper in this, you know. Went to college when I was in college, joined a fraternity, and we started playing cards, a lot of cards in the fraternity. And we might ultimately get to the point of betting a little bit of money on the cards. Never much money, but we might have a limit of a nickel or something like that on a bet. If we're playing blackjack, if we're playing this card, I don't even remember all of the card games now, one card game or another, some sort of poker or another, and you might have five card draw or seven card stud or whatever, you might bet a nickel. And that was still kind of, nobody was thinking or looking at the possibility of really taking money from other people with these small bets, but just enjoying the nature of the game. So that went on, and I didn't think we were passing the lines. Question is, that word I just used, gateway. The other word I used, judgment. Judgment is a weightier matter of the law. Who do I have to judge? Myself. Is this starting to affect the way I think about things? If I have to say, yes, it is, then I have crossed the line. It has started to be wrong for me. Now, just because it crossed the line for me doesn't mean that it's wrong for somebody else. I mean, we have, of course, certain religious groups who feel that cards in themselves, any cards in themselves, are evil. You know, some of those same religious groups feel that dancing is wrong, or some feel that music is wrong. But I don't subscribe to that at all. But what I do consider, because gambling is one of those things, we could use it for enjoyable purposes. We could use some of the concepts of gambling, even though we don't get in actually to gambling. We're rolling dice to play Monopoly and taking money for this, that, and the other thing, and we're doing all of those things. Might be if we let it take hold in us and grow in us in a way that it shouldn't, it might become something that becomes a problem for us. Judgment about what I'm doing and how it's affecting my life and what is the potential for it as the future goes on to become a big problem for me. If I see that, then I need to get out of it and stop it. That's the line for me. That's the line for me. And I would say for every one of us. I've known certain ministers, without mentioning any names, who like to play penny poker. You know, penny here, bet a penny. I don't know, what the limits were. I never played with them, but I know that they did do it, and they didn't feel that they were doing anything wrong. And I assume they weren't, because they knew whether or not this was going to whether it was taking hold of them, and whether they were going to end up with a bigger problem. And as far as I know, they never did. It was just a recreational, enjoyable recreational experience. So, acceptability, again, is a matter, in this regard, I think it's a matter of degree. Let's look at Philippians chapter 3, verses 18 and 19. Because we already mentioned that eating too much could be something that is not appropriate. More than not appropriate, Paul sets it here in some pretty stark terms. Philippians chapter 3, 18. Many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you, even weeping, that they are enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. He talks about, I think, in some of the other letters, gluttony, overeating, affecting somebody's life. Well, this is a matter of degree, isn't it? We all need to eat. God didn't make us so that we could just abstain from eating. I mean, some people have tried that. You know, it's called anorexia, isn't it? But that's not the way things are. And there are things like this, and I believe gambling falls into this category, which can be used in a proper way for recreation, as long as we don't let certain attitudes gain hold on us. It can be used in a proper way, or they can be used improperly. Now, here's some of the things that we have to watch out for. Larceny. You know, some people begin to look at gambling as a way of stealing from other people. So that's one of the things we have to look out for. Exodus 20 and verse 12, you shall not steal. Yet if I see a way that I can take advantage of somebody by using maybe superior knowledge about risk or any other sort of skill that I may have, I can take advantage of other people and steal their resources from them. While I might say gambling is okay for a simple recreation, when an attitude of larceny begins to creep in, it is wrong. Second thing I would say you have to guard against is wasting the resources that God has given you. God has given you certain resources to manage. The key word for the management of the resources that God has given each one of us, stewardship. We are to be good stewards of God's resources. If we get to the point that we are misusing those resources, losing them by gambling them away in one way or another, whether it's in card games or dice or casinos or whatever, or if it's just in taking chances in life that we shouldn't take, buying too much of a risky thing in the stock market could be an example. That's a gamble, isn't it? Whereas investing would be a little, you know, we might not think that's gambling, but we can, we run the risk, if we are willing to run the risk of wasting the resources that God has given us, we have become poor stewards. Stewardship is important. Peter says the following. 1 Peter 4, verses 8 through 10. Above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity, this is very, very interesting phrase here, charity shall cover the multitude of sins. Verse 9, use hospitality one to another without grudging. Verse 10, as every man has received the gift, God has given us all gifts, hasn't he? And we're to be stewards of those gifts. Even so, minister the same. That's a part of our stewardship, is to minister the gifts that God has given us. Minister means what? To serve other people with the gifts that God has given us as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. So God's judgment is we are stewards and we are being held accountable for how we use God's resources. Judgment is a weightier matter of the law. When we talk about gambling, we are talking about maybe games of chance which involve risking money on that. But life itself is a gamble. And there is a right and a wrong way for us to manage risk. I would say the following. When we try and use time and chance to steal, it is wrong. Paul says this in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10. He says, even when we were with you, this we commanded you, if any would not work, neither should he eat. So we, through our labor, are to perform and work. And if we get to the point that we think we can just avoid working and take money from others through gambling, then that is not appropriate. So that's one of the things. Again, God's judgment is that we are to be stewards and we are to use proper stewardship with the money. Third thing that could be wrong with gambling, and I think this involves a lot with many people, they call it addiction. I'm not sure if it's addiction, but at least in the classical sense of the word, because addiction involves a dependence, to me, on some sort of a chemical or physical thing. But yet, many people are just seemingly unable to stop gambling because it gives them a kind of euphoria, an emotional high, emotional experience. And that is, I would say, in itself to be automatically rejected and to be guarded against in our own lives. Because if we get into that same situation, we could do that. Not that I think anybody is running the risk in doing that. But that motivation for gambling seems to violate the purpose. So that's my my sermon on gambling. We all are involved in risk taking. When we talk about gambling, if we're talking about gaming for the gain of money, then I think we automatically reject that. If we are involved in trying to take somebody else's resources and attitude of larceny, then that is wrong. If we are wasting our own resources in stewardship that we should be using for proper purposes, then that's wrong. And if we are emotionally building ourselves into a state of euphoria by gambling, then that is also wrong. So let's all restrict our gambling to the things that are appropriate and good.